You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect. Good morning. We are at the end of our Welcome to the Neighborhood series, so unfortunately we will not see any more of Mr. Rogers live, or his friend Mr. McFeely, who is probably still going to have that mustache stuck to his face for the rest of the week. So, but yeah, we're going to wrap things up today, and we're finally getting to the climax of our story. We're getting to the spot where it actually matters. Every week until this point, it's kind of like, okay, now it's going to matter this week. Before we get into that, I want to talk about riding the bench. And you know, this is I don't know if you can see from where you are, but there's a sideline here. And I'm sitting on the bench here with the water cooler. And if anybody feels like, wow, that was an amazing sermon, and you want to dump this on me, it's empty. So, but you're probably not going to say, wow, that was an amazing sermon anyway. So, but here we are, you know, sitting on the bench. When you're on the bench, when you're on the sidelines, you are not in the game. And, you know, I don't know what your background in sports is or was or will be. But sometimes, you know, some of you are starters and you've been in the game from the beginning. And sometimes some of us just aren't. And we sit on the bench, and we make the bench look good, like we work it, you know? But this idea of being on the bench means you're not actually in the game. And here's the thing. Sometimes sitting on the sidelines isn't good enough. Because if you have any kind of, especially if you have some passion for your team, you know, you want to be in the game, you want to be making a difference, unless you're really awful and you're like, no, please, don't put me in. But you want to be in, you want to make a difference, and you get excited, you get, like, I want to do something. And sometimes you get involved. Now, this is where my illustration is going to break down, but sometimes you get involved and maybe, just because you're so excited, maybe you're not supposed to be in the game, like this player here. So that was a game between, let's get this right, Zimmerman High School and St. Cloud Cathedral last fall, last October. And St. Cloud had not, let me get the name right, yeah, St. Cloud, this is in Minnesota, did I say that? They had not won a game at all season. And that was, I'll get the player right here. He was the captain. The captain of the St. Cloud team. So you got to give him some, like, all right, I'm impressed with your emotion and your heart. And they hadn't won a game all season. This is the end of October. The season is winding down. And they were getting blown away. They ended up losing 53 to 20 by the end of the game. And so this senior captain, watching the team, watching the Zimmerman High School guy run down the field, about to score another touchdown, couldn't handle it anymore. And he said, you know what, I'm done sitting on the sidelines. And so he gets into the game, makes the tackle, because he's done. I'm done sitting back. I'm done sitting here watching things happen that I can do something about. Now, at that point, the referee flew through the flag. There we go. And he was actually, here's an interesting little rule note. If that happens, the NFL, college, and high school rule books say it's at the discretion of the referee to do whatever they feel is right. And so at that point, they sent everybody home and gave everybody ice cream. No, they awarded the touchdown to the team. But this idea of that guy, what's his name? Let me get his name right. Captain Brad Reuter. Brad Reuter, the senior captain of this team. So here he is in charge, you know, the captain, the one leading his group, and sees another touchdown coming. And so instead of just sitting back, staying on the bench, staying on the sideline, he gets into the game and makes the difference. Now, in that case, obviously, it's kind of against the rules. It's frowned upon in football to have random people running into the field tackling people. But so often, we are supposed to be in the game, and we stay on the sidelines. We stay on the bench. When there's something that is happening and we are supposed to be doing something about it, we're content to stay behind on the sidelines and not actually get in, get involved, and make a difference and do something. And so we're wrapping up this series called Welcome to the Neighborhood about the parable, the story of the Good Samaritan. And we're finally going to meet this Good Samaritan. But the point that I want you to get today is this. In your neighborhood, there we go. In your neighborhood, there are those who do. Around you, there are people that are doers. They do. They are not content to stay on the sideline when they see a need, when they see a problem, when they see brokenness, as we talked about 2 weeks ago, when they see a broken person. They jump in. They say, I'm not sitting back. I'm getting into the game. I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to do something. And as we'll see today, we need to be those doers. We need to be people that don't just sit on the sideline, don't just ride the bench, but we step over and get into the game and make a difference. So we're going to pick up, as the house lights are going to come on here if you have a paper Bible. If you have the YouVersion app, we're going to be in Luke chapter 10, where we have been the last 3 weeks of this series. And I'm going to read kind of quickly the beginning part here, because at this point we've heard, this will be the fourth time we've heard some of these things. But to give you a little context, Luke chapter 10, YouVersion, tap on Luke, tap on 10, tap on 25, and we'll be there. And this is what it says in Luke 10, what Luke records. One day, an expert in religious law stood up to test Jesus by asking him this question. Teacher, what should I do to inherit eternal life? Jesus replied, well, what does the law of Moses say? How do you read it? The man answered, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, and all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. Right, Jesus told him. Do this and you will live. Jesus says, look, you got it. You got it, expert. Even though you were trying to throw me off, your answer was right. Right on. Do those things. Well, the man wanted to justify his actions. So he asked Jesus, well, and just who is my neighbor? Jesus replied with a story. And this story is what we're talking about this month. And so Jesus tells the story because this man is trying to justify himself, trying to get out of actually obeying Jesus. We talked about that in week one when we looked at in your neighborhood, there are people that make excuses for doing what's right. And it says, Jesus says this, a Jewish man was traveling from Jerusalem down to Jericho. And I'm going to pause there again just to remind you that this man is Jewish. And as we looked at last week, when we ran into the two characters that came along, they were supposed to be the heroes of the story because he was part of their family. But this was a Jewish man. The road from Jerusalem to Jericho, as we talked about the second week, when we said there's people in your neighborhood, there are people that are broken. We talked about this Jewish man. So he was traveling down from Jerusalem down to Jericho, and he was attacked by bandits. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him up, and left him half dead beside the road. And again, that was week two. You can find this all, by the way, at mc3church.org. Click on Listen to the Point and catch up where we were. So there's this man, a Jewish man, beaten up, robbed, with nothing, broken on the side of the road. By chance, a priest came along. And so now, the audience, the people that Jesus is talking to, especially this expert in religious law, they're like, oh, yes, the hero's here, a priest. He's one of the great Jewish leaders. He came along, and that word by chance, as we talked about last week, is like, hey, what, as luck would have it, in an amazing coincidence, this priest came along. But when he saw the man lying there, as Kirk prayed, he crossed to the other side of the road and passed him by. Okay. Talked about last week. You know, the priest, he's got some reasons. He's not allowed to touch a dead body. Maybe that guy's dead. He didn't know better. Okay. Oh, but a temple assistant, which that's the New Living Translation. We talked about last week that the official title is a Levite. A Levite, oh, they're going to do it. They're the hero. Like the priest, he's got excuses. I get it. It makes sense. But the Levite is going to walk. He's going to do something. But he walked over, looked at him lying there, but he also passed by on the other side. And that's what we talked about last week. In your neighborhood, there are people that do things to look good. right? What do we talk about? They pretend to be good. And now we're finally to the climax of this story. Continuing on, it says, then, and I love the New Living Translation here, a despised Samaritan came along. Now, I need to tell you this, that this person, this Samaritan, we call him a good Samaritan. We use that phrase all the time today. I mean, way outside of church, a good Samaritan is someone that helps someone else in need. But a Samaritan, now, if you remember when we talked about the wall, when we talked about when we did the wall series, when we did the Word 3 series, that in the history of Israel, in the history of the Jewish people, long story short, Moses, they end up going to the promised land, and eventually the people continue to disobey God, and God says, look, I'm going to take you out of your land as punishment, and you're going to be out of your land for 70 years, and you're going to be exiled among all the other nations, and that's what the Babylonians then came in 586 B.C., 722 is Assyria. 586 B.C., Babylon came in and exiled all the Jewish people. And now in exile, there was a guy named Daniel. You know a lot of things about him. He was in a lion's den and other things like that. And while they were in exile, the commands that God gave his people still applied. Stay true to me. Don't follow other idols. Don't follow other religions. And for these people to lose their land, I mean, you know how it would be if I said, hey, you know what? You're out of your house. You're going to go live over there. Like, that would be punishment. And so that's what God was doing until they brought their hearts back. But while they were in exile, God also said, do not intermarry with the people of these nations. Stay pure. Stay close to me. Because these nations don't follow me. And if you get married, if you marry into someone that doesn't follow me, it's going to bring you and draw you away from me. And so that was kind of a very important commandment as they were in this exile land. Which, there's a point here. Then there was a group of people that didn't follow that command. They intermarried with the other nations. At that time, they were the godless nations. And so 70 years later, when God brought them back to the land and said, you can come back to the land that you promised, and Nehemiah, during the wall series, was the one that built the wall, as we talked about that a couple years, was that last year? They came back, and there was a group of people that also came back, but they didn't just come back with their Jewish husbands and wives. They came back with their pagan, their godless husbands and wives, and came back to this area, and they ended up settling in a land known as Samaria. And so the people in this land of Samaria, called Samaritans, were people that had intermarried and broken God's commandment, and God is full of grace and has done amazing things and all that, but to a good, solid, religious, fake on the outside Jewish person, a Samaritan was despised. They broke God's commandments. They intermarried. God said to stay pure, and they didn't. Now, again, as we talked about last week, the pretenders, the Jewish leaders were so fake. But, so the Samaritans were despised. They were the enemies. They were the ones that were like, no, we don't have anything to do with them because they disobeyed God. So that's what a Samaritan is. And that's why this story has such a punch. Because for us, we're like, oh, of course it was a good Samaritan, because Samaritans are good. But to the audience, to the Jewish people that Jesus was speaking to, the Samaritan was not the hero. A Samaritan could never be a hero. And yet, a despised Samaritan came along. And when he saw the man, he felt compassion for him. Going over to him, the Samaritan soothed his wounds with olive oil and wine, and bandaged them. Then he put the man on his own donkey and took him to an inn where he took care of him. The next day he handed the innkeeper 2 silver coins, telling him, take care of this man. If his bill runs higher than this, I'll pay you the next time I'm here. So at this point, this expert in religious law, who was trying to justify himself by saying, well, Jesus, who is my neighbor? His jaw is on the floor because the Samaritans, like, they're Samaritans. Nothing is good about Samaritans. Like, why? Why would a Samaritan be the hero of this story? Because God, because Jesus was trying to make a point. And his point was that sometimes we can't just sit back and make excuses. We can't just sit back and pretend to be good. Sometimes we need to step in, get off of the sideline, and do something. And so as we talked about these last few weeks, we've kind of done this profile, kind of a description. What does it look like for the first week? You said, what is a profile of an excuser? What are people that make excuses? And maybe you found yourself to be fitting that category. And then we talked about the profile of a broken. What does it look like? What do broken people tend to look like? And maybe you found yourself fitting that category as well, or maybe parts of that. And then last week, we looked at what is the profile of a pretender? What is it the pretenders look like? And this week, I want to talk about what does a doer look like? Let's talk about a profile of a doer, and maybe this fits you as well. And just for what it's worth, not that brokenness is bad, but typically people don't choose to be broken. But definitely excusers and pretenders, that's not the goal. A doer is the goal. Being like this Samaritan is the goal. So let's see, what are some things that we see about the doer? First of all, doers feel emotion. Just like the captain of St. Cloud, is that what it was called? Or is that the toilet paper? The captain of that team, he was tired. And actually, the next day, he issued a reply or an apology to his team and on Twitter and saying, I'm so sorry, my emotions got the best of me. Because, dude, he's tired of watching his team get beat up. He said, it's time to do something. He felt this emotion. And doers feel emotion. And we're going to talk about this. Emotion is a challenging thing because it can be a good thing or it can be a bad thing. And we'll talk about how it can be a bad thing later. But they feel emotion. They're moved. And so that's the first step to being a doer. If you see a situation and it's not breaking your heart, you might want to question what's going on. What's happening in my life? Why does it not break my heart? And maybe it's because you know more of the story. Maybe you're not as compassionate a person as other people. And there's nothing wrong with that. But just understand, feeling emotion is a good thing. It's the question of what do you do with that emotion. That's really where that becomes the issue. And, that's one of the things having led, where's Chris? You know, as we led these teams to Oaxaca over the years, we've been a part of these teams, like, you can't help but feel emotion when you suddenly are serving at 3 Goody Mail and watch these kids that don't have much, don't have clothing, don't have, you know, living in tin shacks and come and get food at a place that's serving them and all the different things that MC3 is such a big part of, which, by the way, guys, it's a timeout. I don't have time to have a timeout. But when we went to the banquet 2 weeks ago, the Forward Edge banquet, they asked me to come and be interviewed on stage on behalf of MC3 and our partnership with them. And when you interact, I'm sure this happens in any situation, but when I interact with the leadership of Forward Edge, they're like, oh, you know, you matter so much to us, you're so important to us. I'm like, sure we are. I know everybody probably is too. And there's nothing wrong with them, you know, being polite. Like, that's good. But when we were at the banquet interacting with some of the other churches, their response was, oh, you're from MC3. Oh, we heard about you. We know what you guys are doing. And I was actually introduced to one of the missions directors of one of the churches. And they said, this is Sean Fitch. Oh, okay, nice to meet you. He's the pastor of MC3. Oh, MC3. Oh, well, you guys have done so much down there. So my point being, God is using you in an incredible way. And we're going to share about our team in a couple of months here once vacations are kind of over. But just want to tell you that this isn't just fake. Like, for real, God is using us to make a difference. But we feel emotion when you see someone in need. You should feel that. And that's okay. And that's what we see in the first part of verse 33 here. Then a despised Samaritan came along, and when he saw the man, he felt compassion for him. Now, the language they spoke when this was written about 2,000 years ago was Greek. And this word compassion, it actually means of the intestines. So it is not just like, oh, poor you. Oh, too bad. That's so sad. No, this is like a gut-wrenching feeling from the intestines. He felt his intestines, which a lot of you have been feeling sick the last week. Like, this is a good kind of feeling, your intestines. But this idea of, like, this just such compassion. So he sees this man, and he felt compassion for him. And that's a good thing. And that's when we recognize that there's emotion playing, that means we're probably on the right track. Now, the next question is, what do you do with that emotion? And by the way, sorry, I feel like I'm really, am I really loud to you? I'm loud to me. Just loud. But, you know, emotions aren't always just, aww. It doesn't have to be that. Sometimes emotions are anger. Why isn't somebody doing this, something about this? Why is this happening like this? Maybe your emotion is like this guy named Jesus who walks into the temple courts that's supposed to be a place of worship, and instead they were using it to make money off of people, cheat money out of people. And so what did Jesus do? It says he was angry and he flipped tables and then made a whip and sent them out of there. Like, there's some emotion at play and it caused him to do something. And by the way, Jesus lived a perfectly sinless life. So that wasn't sin. Now for us, I don't know, if I start flipping tables and I'm whipping people, I'm probably out of control. I'm just saying. If you see that happen, you know, time out, Sean, let's go sit down in the corner. But I'm saying anger sometimes is an emotion that drives us things. There's a book that I read a number of years ago called Holy Discontent. And it's this idea of sometimes things bother us so much and we need to do something about it. So they feel emotion. And I need to go faster because we have so much to talk about. The second thing, so doers feel emotion. The second thing about doers is doers go in motion. They go to the need. And see, here's where now we're starting to make a distinction between the priest and the Levite from last week and the Samaritan. Because what did the priest and the Levite do? They went on the other, they intentionally went out of their way to avoid the problem. No one sees me. No one knows that I'm avoiding it. It doesn't matter. If I pretend it's not there, it doesn't really exist. Meanwhile, this Samaritan, he went in motion. He went to the need. And that's what we see in verse 34, the first part of 34 then. It's, did I do that or did you do that? Go next slide. Sorry, that was my bad. The five Samaritan came along. When he saw the man, he felt compassion for him. Going over to him, he went to the man. And for us, if we're going to be doers, if we're going to be ones that are getting off of the sideline and getting involved, it's going to require, as Kirk prayed, you know, we're going to have to get our hands dirty. We're going to have to go to the needs. And sometimes you go to people, and we talked about that a couple weeks ago, when it comes to the broken, and how, you know, doctors, like, they hand sanitize, but they're in the midst of the sick. And sometimes that's what we need to do. If we're going to be a doer, we can't avoid the issue. We can't be like, oh, I feel bad for you. And we'll see that that's an issue in a little bit. But we need to go, step into the messes, go into the broken lives, go into the hearts of people that need some comfort, go into the homes of people that need help. As Mr. Rogers has said, do something. Shovel a lawn and mow some snow. But getting involved and stepping into the messes, that's what doers do. So, doers feel emotion. Doers go in motion. And then this is kind of tied to the next thing, except that the idea of stepping into the need. But then doers take action. They help. They don't just go, oh, I feel something. Oh, I see you. I'm so sorry. They actually take action. They do something. They help. And that's what we see in verse 34. And I was talking to Mr. Rogers and Mr. McFeely on Thursday night or Wednesday night about the point this week. And like, what do we see the Levite do? He sees the man and goes the other way. What do we see the priest do? He sees the man and goes the other way. What do we see the Samaritan do? The list is long. So the Samaritan came along. He felt compassion. Going over, the Samaritan soothed his wounds with olive oil and wine and bandaged them. So he goes up to this man, gets this, again, there is every chance, let me just clarify this, every chance that if this Samaritan saw this Jewish man in everyday life, the Jewish man would probably turn his back on the Samaritan. Understand that. Like this is a Jewish person going up to a jihadist in modern day, you know, Iran or Iraq. Someone that is clearly opposite of their belief system. And so this Samaritan goes up. He soothed his wounds with olive oil and wine. And just so you know, olive oil and wine, that was the medicine of the time. That was the medicine of the day. And you see oil often used in the New Testament about healing. And it's related to the fact that that's what medicine was. So they used that as a way. So he soothed with olive oil and bandaged them. And so then, here's where it goes even further. So doers feel emotion. Doers go in motion. Doers take action. And finally, doers make a donation. And this all needed to go with the shun thing, because that's me, you know. But donation is probably not a good enough word. Doers sacrifice. This man, this Samaritan, did not just go like, well, you know what, I have an extra one of these, you can have it. You know, this bandage, I found it on the side of the road anyway, let's wrap you up with it. No, he actually went the next step and sacrificed. And as it continues on, I hope I have the right slide here. Okay, so then He put the man on his own donkey. So understand that too. This is not a guy who's hanging out. If you were here the first week, we talked about this road. It's a dangerous, windy road. So he's not like in his house and he's like, oh, I've got a bunch of donkeys out in my yard. Why don't I put you on one of them? This is his own donkey. He was riding on this donkey on this dangerous road, and you're safer traveling on an animal than you would be walking. And so he takes himself off, puts the man on his own donkey, then takes him to an inn, takes him to a local place, and it wasn't a bar, and it wasn't even just like a hotel. Like, this was a place where people would stop, travelers would spend time. And there, he took him there, which had to cost money as well, and then he took care of him there. So here's the Samaritan going somewhere on his own donkey, sees a broken man on the side of the road, the enemy, and says, you know what, hold on. Let's put you on my donkey, and let's put aside my agenda, because we don't know where this Samaritan was going, but he probably wasn't going to an inn to care for someone. So he puts the man on his donkey, takes him to an inn, then takes care of him. And it seems to imply that it took a while, because then he was there overnight. He says the next day, he handed the innkeeper 2 silver coins, and depending on your translation, it might say 2 denarii, denarius. A denarius was basically a day's wage, is what it would cost. So going minimum wage, 8-hour day here in modern day Mifflin County, you're looking at probably about $120. That's minimum wage. That's 8 hours for 2 days. He gave the innkeeper $120. Now, $120, that's not very much. You probably make more than that. Chances are good you make more than that. But would you just give a stranger $120? Because if you saw a stranger on the side of the road in need, you would probably not give them $120. You might give them a buck, maybe 5. But 120 is a lot of a commitment to someone you don't know who's hurt and broken. And I'm not saying that you need to go around and give $120 to people. I'm just saying, understand, this is a big deal. So he gave 2 silver coins, 2 days' wages, and said, take care of this man. If his bill is higher than this, I will pay you the next time I'm here. So not only did he pay a more, you know, in addition to his own donkey, taking him there to pay for the overnight and taking care of him, he then gave the innkeeper money to take care of him and said, look, if it goes even beyond that, I'll pay even more. So this Samaritan sacrificed. And that's what a doer does. A doer doesn't just feel. They don't just feel. They also move towards the problem. And where they're at the problem, they say, I'm going to do something about this. And then sometimes that doing something isn't just, well, this is extra. They sacrifice. They make a donation and say, I'm going further because I really want to help. Because I want to make a difference. Because I'm not content to sit on the sideline while things go out of control. And that's what a doer looks like. That's what we see here. And in your prime groups this week, depending if you guys meet, I know there's a lot of parties at the end of the year. You'll have a chance to just list. I think I came up with 7 things that the Samaritan did for this Jewish man. What are these things? Because this man was a doer. This Samaritan, this enemy of the story, was the one that became the hero. And that's what a doer looks like. So, in your neighborhood, there are those who do. And we're going to come to this question at the end. It's not on the slide here. But we've been asking all series long, which neighbor are you? Who are you? And the question is, are you a doer? Or do you just sit back on the sideline and watch things happen? Or hope, you know what, someone else will deal with that. Maybe someone else will solve that problem. I don't want to get my hands dirty. And of course, we can tie in all the things we've been talking about all month long. We make excuses why it doesn't really apply to us, why we don't need to help. Or maybe we just do it if people are seeing and watching us, we'll be impressive to everyone and then we'll help. But if no one sees, it doesn't really matter. But in your neighborhood, there are those who do. And God wants us to be doers. The Samaritan was the hero of the story. Jesus is saying, and we'll come to this in a second, but Jesus is saying, this is what you're supposed to do. This is who you are supposed to be like. So let me just share quickly, because there's some other things we need to talk about here. But I want to share what I've called the do's and don'ts of doing. Or the don'ts and do's of doing. Do's and don'ts. The do's and don'ts of doing. Just a couple of things to put in the back of your mind when it comes to getting off of the sideline, when it comes to not just sitting here, but actually stepping into the game, into making a difference, into doing something. There are some things that just you need to remember and understand. The first thing is a don't. Don't just feel. do? Now, again, we said earlier, emotion, it's good. Allow emotion to drive us to help. Allow us to be feeling, to feel compassion, to feel anger and say, I'm not sitting back. I'm going to jump in and tackle that guy, metaphorically speaking. Some people are like, what happened to you? Oh, I was at church. And this guy said I was supposed to tackle people. And right. Anyway, there was that scene in, what was that movie? The magician movie. The magician movie, and it was called Now You See Me. There's a scene where they say tackle it. Anyway, okay, Now You See Me. You can watch that someday. But that's not the point. Don't just feel something. Do something. And that's what James is just kind of a reminder here. In James chapter 2, James is all about action. It's a great book if you want to read it. James wrote this letter to the early church and said, here's some things that are important for living. And he says this in James 2, and you probably have heard this if you've been in church for any amount of time. He says, what good is it, dear brothers and sisters, speaking to the church, what good is it if you say you have faith but don't show it by your actions? Can that kind of faith save anyone? Now, just a time out here. James is not saying that you earn your way to heaven, that you earn God's love, none of that. He's just saying that if you have a change in here, it's going to be expressed here. You're going to see it. It's going to happen with our hands and our feet. So he says, if you don't have faith but don't do anything, he's like, that's not really faith. You're a faker. You're a pretender. We talked about last week. He says, suppose you see a brother or sister who has no food or clothing. And you say, goodbye and have a good day. Stay warm and eat well. Like, he's like, what? Shut up. Stop wishing. Stop wishing some things for these people. That's not making a difference. That's not doing anything. He says, don't just say it. He says, then you don't give them any food or clothing. What good does that do? He says. What good does that do? He says, so you see, faith by itself isn't enough unless it produces good deeds. It is dead and useless. So James says, look, feeling isn't enough. It's good. But don't let feeling be the end. Do something about it. Don't just say like, oh, yeah, well, good for you. God bless you. You know, all right. Isn't that sweet? Bless your heart. No, do something. James says, don't just feel. If you're feeling it, do something about it. Step in. Get involved. So that's the first don't. The second one is a do. Do because you are doing it for Jesus. And I hope I changed this around this morning. By the way, Prime Group leaders, there's a couple of extra things here if you want to add in your discussion guide. But do because you're doing for Jesus. In Matthew chapter 25, it's a very long passage, and I'm going to kind of summarize it. I'm going to read the first thing and then explain it. But basically, I just want to clarify that Jesus, in the context of Matthew 25, was asked about the end of times, the end of days, and you know, when Jesus is going to return, what's it going to be like, how are these things all going to turn out? And he answers with a bunch of different stories. And so then we get to this Matthew chapter 25, verse 31 story. It could be, there's some scholars that are split, and I just want to be clear about this. What he could be referring to here is what happens during what's called the tribulation. And it's referring to people that are in this hard time, which if you're a follower of Jesus, based on what I believe about the Bible, you won't be there. Or it's referring to the people in Jesus' time right there. And it's hard to say because he's talking about end times. It seems kind of strange that he suddenly would switch to like now. And I say that because what we're about to read is often quoted. And like, oh, this is a good thing. And it could be, but it might be something a little bit different. And I'm totally messing you up right now, just so you know. Reread it and figure it out for yourself. But what we do see in this passage is that whatever this is referring to, whether it's to the Jesus time to us now, or whether it's referring to the tribulation time, Jesus is making a statement that when we serve other people, no matter when that will be, we are serving Jesus. So he goes, when the Son of Man, Jesus is speaking, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered in his presence, and he will separate the people as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll place the sheep at his right hand and the goats at his left. And just to clarify what's going on here, from what I understand, apparently sheep, and I'm not a farmer or a shepherd, but apparently sheep and goats in the Middle East look similar. But sheep are worth far more. And so when it came time to go to market, they would want to make sure that they clearly separated the sheep from the goats, because the sheep are going to get more money than the goats ever would. And so he's saying at the end, there's going to be this time where Jesus is going to separate the sheep from the goats. And it goes on and says, then the king will say to those on his right, to the sheep, come and basically come into the kingdom. And he says, because I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. So he's saying to these sheep, to these righteous people, he says, come into heaven. And the people respond here in this story that Jesus is saying. He says, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you? When were you thirsty and we gave you a drink? Or a stranger who showed you hospitality? Or naked and gave you clothing? When did we ever see you sick in prison and visit you? And Jesus responds and says, look, I tell you this, when you did these things for one of the least, and again, whether that least is during now or during the end times, Jesus says, look, when you are doing something for these least, these lesser people that don't have these things, he says, you are doing it to me. And so Jesus is making this very clear statement that when we serve other people, and they might be broken, and they might not be able to return the favor, they might not be able to pay us back, he says, it's okay, because you're doing this for me. And when you're serving other people, you're serving me. And then he goes on and says to the people on the other side of the goats, he says, you're not allowed to come in because you didn't do all these things. And they're like, Jesus, when didn't we do all these things? He says, look, you never cared for the people around you. You never cared for these least of these. And so therefore, you can't enter the kingdom. So I just jumped through like five slides. I'm standing to scroll here. So the do's and don'ts, don't just feel do and do. Thank you. Because you are doing for Jesus. And that's what this Matthew 25 passage is about. Regardless of when it's supposed to occur, he says, look, when you serve people that are the least, that are lesser, that serving, you're serving me. And we talk about this idea of being the hands and feet of Jesus. We go to serve in Oaxaca. You serve your neighbors around you. We are doing it not just for those people. We're doing it for Jesus. Jesus says, this is me that you're serving. The third thing is a don't. Don't ignore what to do. And if you have not heard this verse I'm about to read, I'm sorry, because you could kind of perhaps claim ignorance at this point. But as soon as I share this, you're going to be like, why did you have to say that? Now I'm responsible. But James, later in chapter 4, he says, if anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. So James, like, we're all like, okay, this is, yeah, okay, I know I did that. I probably shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. James says, like, if God is leading, if you see that there's something good that you should be doing and you don't do it, your excuses and your pretending don't apply. It's sin. When you know that this is something you're supposed to be doing, when you know the good that you ought to do, when you know that God is leading you, and I should add that to it, like, we're not just saying because somebody online said you better do this. Because, you know, there's a sad video with Sarah McLachlan singing the song, oh, I better do this. We're not talking guilt trip. We're talking about you know what I'm talking about. There's a moment where you're like, I should do something about this. And we quickly justify it. We make excuses. And James says, if that's you, you're in sin. So don't ignore what to do. And finally, do. Why? Because Jesus did for us. Jesus did for us. In 1 John chapter 3, John writes this. He says, this is how we know what love is. What does it look like to love people? What does it look like to be a doer? What does it look like to be a good Samaritan? This is how we know what it is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. That's beautiful. That's powerful. And if John had left it there, we would be saying, amen, this is incredible. But John didn't even leave it there. He said, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. John says, look, guys, Jesus did this for us. And he says, we're supposed to do the same. And if you think, no, I can't get my hands dirty in that situation, I'm glad that Jesus got his hands dirty in this situation. I'm glad that Jesus said, I'm stepping into the mess. I'm not staying on the sideline. I'm getting in. I'm becoming flesh. That's what John 1 says. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. He became one of us so that he could clean us, so that he could heal us, so that he could die for our sins. And I guarantee that this earth is a whole lot dirtier than the glory of God in heaven. And Jesus stepped down to be one of us. And so John says, we need to do the same thing. If anyone has material possessions, which, by the way, if you are here and are clothed, you have some. So that's you and me. And sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them. There's that feeling, that emotion. How can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, very similar to what James said, but with actions and in truth. Do something. So, the do's and don'ts of doing. Don't just feel. Feeling is good, but don't just let it stop there. Do something with that emotion. Do, because when you do, when you serve other people, you're serving Jesus. Don't ignore what to do. If you know, if God is leading you, and you're going to have a chance to respond to that today. If God is leading you to do something, don't ignore it. Step into it, even if it might cost you something, even if it might be difficult. Step into that. And then do because Jesus did for us. So in your neighborhood, there are those who do. Are you one of those people? So that's the story. The parable, perhaps, the story of the Good Samaritan. And the story is over, but the bigger narrative is not. Because then Jesus finishes telling that story, and this is what we read then in the next verse, in verse 36. Now Jesus says, now which of these three, priest, Levite, Samaritan, would you say was a neighbor to the man who was attacked by bandits? Jesus asked. Now again, we said this every week in this series, but I'm going to say it again. The word neighbor that Jesus is using here does not refer to one of two things. It doesn't refer to two things that would be common. It's not referring to the people that are their neighbors, to their house. And it doesn't refer, and this is what the Jewish audience was assuming, it doesn't refer to people that are of your same family line, of your same blood, your same relatives, your people. It's not referring just to Jewish people, because all of a sudden Jesus makes the Samaritan the neighbor. The word neighbor means, the Greek means proximity, nearness to. And so that nearness, and again, like, Kirk, seriously, like, take my notes and pray about it. That neighbor is the person in the cubicle, the person you work with, the person you live near, the person in your home. The neighbor is the people that you have proximity to. And so Jesus says to these guys, to this religious expert, he's trying to justify himself, who would you say was the neighbor to this man? Who was? And that's why he says, who was the neighbor to the man? Not which one was the neighbor, but who was the neighbor to the man? Who was the one that was in the actual proximity? Who was the neighbor to him? The man replied, well, the one who showed him mercy. I'm sure there's kind of a hanging of the head here. Before he was kind of arrogant and cocky, and now there's this, the one who showed him mercy. Jesus, there he goes again, answering our complicated questions with really good answers. It's like he's God. And then Jesus said, yes, now go and do the same. Jesus says, yes, we need to be doers. We need to be the ones that are getting off of the sideline and doing. And this whole series, Welcome to the Neighborhood, is all about this. It got to this point, this question at the end. Jesus wasn't just telling a story because it was story time around the fire. He was making a point that a neighbor is what this Samaritan was, and we are to do the same. So the question that we have been asking all series long, which neighbor are you? As we looked at the very first week, we looked at the excuser. And this was that expert in religious law, trying to find a way, find a loophole around of actually doing what he was supposed to do. Trying to find a way out and make excuses for why he didn't actually need to love his neighbor as himself. So Jesus, who is my neighbor, smarty pants? So are you the excuser? Are you one that's trying to make excuses? And I don't even trying. Let's be real. We make excuses. We sit here and we see a need. And we're like, well, it is really late. And I don't know. my family's expecting me at home, and I don't have that much money. I mean, there's plenty of other people that have way more money than I do, and I don't have the time to do this. And I mean, let's be honest, Jesus, if I hang around those people, it might mess me up. And we make all these excuses for not getting off of the bench. So maybe you're the excuser, or maybe part of you is the excuser. Maybe, what about this? Maybe you're the broken. This man who is traveling on the road. Back up one. This man that is traveling on the road and is beat up and left naked and abandoned. And maybe you're the broken. And as we said that week two of the series, that doesn't mean you sit around and wallow in your brokenness. It doesn't mean you say, well, why doesn't anybody help be my neighbor? But we recognize that there's a broken part in all of us. And everyone around us is broken. And so when we spend time with people, when we interact with them, we need to recognize that, you know what? Part of the reason they're responding this way is because of something that's going on in their heart and in their life. And we need to step back and have a little bit of grace, have a little bit of compassion in the lives of those that are broken. Maybe you're the pretender, as we talked about last Sunday. Maybe you're like the priest and the Levite, because no one was there to watch. No one was there to see. Just, hey, I'm looking super good and super spiritual, and you look fantastic today. But when you get home, you're a totally different person in the way you act. I'm not talking about the way you dress. Maybe when you're on display, you're a really spiritual person with all the right answers. Maybe at Prime Group, man, you're just, wow, spot on. But you know that as soon as you get home, there's things that you're doing that you shouldn't be doing. There's ways you react to people and interact with those around you that is not honoring to God. You're just a pretender. Or finally, are you the doer? Are you the good Samaritan? That's why he was called good, because he did it. Now, Jesus never called him good, by the way. That's our title that we've added over the years. But this man did something about the needs. He said, I'm not content to stay on the sideline. He got up and stepped in to the mess. So what I want you to consider here as we close, as we wrap this up, is what is God, and maybe this series, is there something God has placed on your heart and your mind as someone, you know what, I need to be a doer to them. I need to be the neighbor to them. I need to help. I need to serve them. And maybe that them is an individual person right around you. Maybe that them is doing something for Trigo Emiel. I don't know. Maybe that them is school supplies. I don't know what that is. Those are just our things here. But maybe God is laying on your heart something that you need to do. You need to be a doer for them. And in the back, you actually crossed the sideline. And so now you are on the new sidelines. You're sitting over here. And there's a pile of pens back there on the floor. They're back there? They're back there. Okay. There's a pile of pens back there on the floor. And what I'm going to ask you to do, and this is only between you and God, but if God is saying, you know what, I need to get into the game. I need to step out of the sideline into the game. Take one of those markers and just, and this isn't for old people like me who've been doing flooring all weekend, sorry, but get down and just write down on that sideline, what is it that you need to do? And if you want to write in like secret codes and no one around you like judges you, which I don't think is going to happen, but you're welcome to do that. But that's an opportunity for you to say, okay, it's time for me to not stay on the sideline. And don't feel pressure to do this, but if you feel like, you know what, it's time for me not to stay on the bench. I need to get in there and make a difference. I need to do something about what I see around me. Then I'd like you to just go back there and you'll write this down. And we're going to play a song, actually a video with lyrics on the screen. And this song is called I Refuse. And it's by a guy named Josh Wilson. He wrote it about 10 years ago. And it's all about, I'm not content. I refuse to just sit back when there's needs. And so as this song is playing, as you watch it, you know, if God is leading you to go back there and say, I'm done, and write that on the sideline, and then just step across the sideline, just as sort of a physical gesture of that, and then come and have a seat, and we'll wrap up here. But I wanted to tell you something that's just kind of why this song is powerful to me, is because about 8 years ago now, a little bit more than that, God was stirring some things in my heart. And I'm going, you know what? I'm not content with the way church is going. And I'm part of this machine that I'm leading and running. And saying, God, I feel like there's more that needs to be done. I feel like there's so many people that need to hear about Jesus in an environment that's different than typical church. And God was leading me, kind of, that was the beginning of the MC3, kind of God leading on my heart to plant with a number of people in this room, this church, this body here. And this song, I remember I was riding home from my in-laws, and this song came on the radio, and it broke me. Like, yes, it's time. I refuse to sit back. I need to step up and do what God has called me to do. And let me tell you, it was inconvenient. And this isn't about me. I'm just saying, all those things we talk about the Samaritan, when we do, it's not convenient. It requires sacrifice. It requires us to step into places that are a little bit messy. But when we do that, it's such an incredible experience to watch God use us. So we're going to play that song. If God is leading you to go back, write something on that sideline, step across and have a seat, and then we'll wrap up. We're running a little bit on, we're doing all right on time. Not the best, but we'll give you that opportunity to do that right now. So I don't know if there'll be enough light back there, but we'll pretend there is. So why don't you go ahead and turn off the house lights just to give you a little more time for reflection. And then whenever you're ready, go ahead, Garrett. Let's pray. God, I thank you so much for this story, this parable, whatever it is, of this Samaritan and his willingness not just to sit back, but to step up and do. And I pray for each of us, God, for those that have written on this sideline and are going to step in and not just stay back, but step into the game and make a difference. I pray that you'd help us to stay to that commitment, to stay true to it, and to honor you. I pray for the rest of us too, God. We want to be doers. We don't want to be excusers or pretenders. And we want to recognize that there are broken people all around us. So help us to be different and changed because of you in us and because of what you have done for us on the cross, so that we have a reason to do things for others, so that we have a hope to share with others. We thank you for that. In Jesus' name, amen. Just want to remind you of what... you're good. I'll go to YouVersion. It was there. Disappeared. There we go. If you have a YouVersion app, it is a free Bible app. You can get it by Bible.com/app or look at it in any of your random stores, online marketplaces. But there are five plans that we've kind of been doing this month. And because next week's the fifth Sunday and we're not meeting, there's a chance for you to kind of pick up a couple more to go further. So I'm just going to quickly review them for you all if you want to jump on that. By the way, if you're friends with MC3 Church on YouVersion, MC3 is doing all these plans right now. But one is called How to Neighbor. And it is a... I think it should be coming up there. There we go. How to Neighbor, this is a plan from Life Church, which is Craig Rochelle. It's a video and reading plan. So this is it's a 10-day plan that you could go through and look at being a good neighbor a little bit more. There's another one called Who's My Neighbor? And this is a 13-day plan. That's a little bit more in-depth. It's written by a Bible college faculty, and they put that one together that you can a little deeper into it. Then there's a plan called Being a Good Samaritan. And this is a 5-day video study. If video is your thing, you can join that plan and follow along to read your Bible every day. Of course, YouVersion gives you reminders if you want them. And then the fourth plan here is called The Good Samaritan. And this is a verse-by-verse, just like we've done over this series. It's by Samaritan's Purse, which is Franklin Graham. He's the son of Billy Graham. It's their organization talking about the Good Samaritan. And then, as we said, and I know a lot of you jumped on this one, is there's a 4-day plan called Fred Rogers and the Call to Create, about Mr. Rogers and his faith, as Mr. Rogers shared with us last week about he is actually an ordained or was an ordained minister. So there's some YouVersion plans.